begin this the week long overviews of the committees, different departments, and appreciate the departments that have come forward today. We're going to begin with Military and Veterans Affairs, and then we're going to be a little bit flexible as Commissioner Shively may have a bit of a conflict. If he's not here, we're going to be a little bit fluid, but we do have natural resources and revenue. And as I directed Anna Lee and OMB to encourage the departments to be brief, limit their comments and overall discussion to a half hour. Every minute they go over, they're going to be penalized $1 million per minute. There was strong encouragement to be specific here. So with that, first we're going to hear from Colonel, soon to be General, Oates, and welcome him here and congratulate him on his appointment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like to thank you for it. This is really one of my first actions here, and to assist in the difficult budget decisions you have to make. I'm working without pay now. I don't get started. I get paid until the first of February.
Welcome to the club.
Well, thank you very much.
Get used to it.
And it's too late to back out.
I've had a chance to meet many of you over the past week or so, and I would like to thank all of you for your reception and your support thus far. I'd like to introduce members of my staff that will answer the truly tough questions when they come. Carol and Nico Buss, who are both, and I'd like to have this on the record, DMVA and DNR. They work for both those organizations. And Colonel George Canellis, who's the Chief of Staff of the Air Guard. We've got one mistake on the first chart. It should be, say, Commissioner Designee, because I realize that it's not a ball or a strike. The umpire says it's a ball or a strike, so it's a designee. If you go to the first chart, and I'll go through this real quick, and I'll make my biggest impact up front in the briefing, kind of the bottom line. But I would like to say DMVA, and you see on the bottom of this circle, state support. That's what we do. Now, we get many of our resources from federal sources. We do many federal missions, but our overall mission is one of state support for the Alaskan people and our state missions that we have to accomplish. Then if you go to the next page, page 2, the governor's priorities, your priorities, and all of our priorities, jobs and economic development. We're one of the biggest employers anywhere in the state with one of the smallest state budgets. And I'll show you some specifics on that later. But our jobs and economic development spread throughout the state. Next, children and education, whether it's Youth Corps, whether it's through the Air Guard or the Army Guard, it's education that it transmits out throughout the state. It's critical to our success and critical to Alaska's success. Healthy and safe communities from the Department of Emergency Services and also to the Guard activities that they do throughout the state. And finally, budget discipline. If you'll turn to the next slide, you'll see here, and I think this captures the essence of the briefing. You can see for a total state input of approximately $8 million, that generates federal funds of some $23.4 million. In other words, for every dollar we put in from the state, we generate approximately $3 federal dollars. But even more importantly, that $30 million then generates a total of $160 million for all of our missions that we get, for all the funds that come into the state, all of our military construction, when you lump it all together. And then if you took an economic multiplier of 1.5, our total economic impact on the state from this $8 million is $245 million each year. So, and that's a significant thing and probably the bottom line of what I'll brief you on today. You go to slide 4, this just graphically shows the size of this department. For that $8 million, we have some 4,200 employees in the state. If we were private business, we'd be one of the largest employers in the state. And this is not only in the large communities, but also in the rural communities as well. The next page, 4A, DMVA highlights. This group needs no briefing on what our mission is. A few things we would like to highlight, again, in addition to our size, that we're located in 80 communities throughout the state. About 34% of the Army Guard is Alaskan Native representation. About 23% of the Air Guard is female. And then we add significant value to the nation, whether it's preparation and response to emergencies, whether it's training youth through our Youth Corps, whether it's the accomplishment of state missions through the Guard, or national level missions for the nation. Next slide. Slide five, or page five, shows the impact when the Guard is downsized. What this shows is, as a result of the end of the Cold War, and as a result of recruiting and retention problems that we had in some of our rural communities, we saw 25 communities across Alaska lose their Guard representation. When you run the numbers of about 10 members of the Guard in each of those communities, the salary impact per community is about $30,000 each year, and that's significant. The cumulative impact, when you look at 25 communities, is an impact of about $750,000 for rural Alaska. The gross economic impact of that is $1.1 million. And then you add that to the full-time positions that were a result of downsizing of the active and reserve components of 122 full-time employees, and you have a gross economic impact of about $10.5 million. So every position that is taken, whether that's national or eliminated by the state, or every dollar that we eliminate from the state budget, causes a corresponding and dramatic increase in the amount of dollars we generate for the state. On six, now let me talk about where we're going. If you look at the Alaska Army National Guard, in addition to their current missions that they have, their aviation battalion just received an increase in their DAMPL, the Department of the Army Master Priority List. What that means is they are tagged for specific contingency plans, and importantly for us, that brings more dollars, more money for spare parts, more flying hours, so they can train to a higher level of readiness. Also in the Alaska Air Guard, or Alaska Army Guard, we're training for weapons of mass destruction raid teams, rapid assessment initial detection detachments. This could ultimately represent 22 full-time positions and 22 part-time jobs for Alaska National Guard members. These raid teams are a result of what you've seen across the world, whether it's the World Trade Center bombing or the sarin gas attacks in Tokyo. It's our nation's realization that we have to have entities tied to the FEMA regions, in Alaska's case, Alaska itself, to be able to respond to these threats and be able to react to these threats. The most significant mission that is possible for the Army Guard is ballistic missile defense. The Army and the Army Guard here in Alaska, if the country decides to field ballistic missile defenses, the Army Guard will play a key role in that. And that will bring additional full-time missions to Alaska in addition to the other resources that this significant national project will bring. On the Alaska Air National Guard side, in addition to their traditional missions, which are both within the state and all over the world, in Bosnia, in Germany, and South America, they're refueling their tactical airlift missions, their communications missions for SYNCPAC. The growth is in the area of assuming the NORAD mission, the North American Air Defense Mission, and taking that mission over in its entirety. Also taking full responsibility for the Space Command mission at Clear Air Station here in the interior. With those two missions, we could see a possible growth of 500 full-time positions in the Alaska Air Guard. Now, that's a significant impact, and one where actions are ongoing as we speak to migrate to and assume those missions. Division of Emergency Services, no real changes, although more emphasis on preparation for disaster. More emphasis on fielding a land mobile radio system where we can improve communications in the event of disaster, and more emphasis on preparing for disasters to help mitigate the emergencies and the disasters when they come. Facilities Management Division, if you go to the next chart, page 7. Carol, give me the hook when I go over my million-dollar time here. On page 7, this just shows the organizational structure that you're familiar with. One point that's not shown here, just about every position in this organization is a combination of both state and federal resourcing. Not in every case, but just about every instance, although there's some state full-time positions, the vast majority have a combination of state and federal spending. You'll also see the facilities management that's migrating under the Army National Guard. For reasons of efficiency and possibly save one position, I think that's already been realized. And then the other services, as you see, although in this chart you see a mixture of divisions, sections, and programs like counter drug. I can answer questions later on about the size of the staff and the amount of dollars for each. Next slide, the Army National Guard. Again, we've made most of these points in going through the briefing. I would like to highlight their activities and community support. They're participating in building a road on Annette Island as part of an innovative readiness training project for DOD, participating in Arctic Care. It's a project that where we have a joint force of both active and reserve component units that go out and give medical care to our rural facilities. Last 2 years was in Bethel. This next year will be in Dillingham and Bristol Bay. Saw about 4,000 patients last year in 10 villages, doctors, dentists, in some cases veterinary services. That's just one example of what your Guard is doing out in these communities. Next slide, the Air National Guard. We've talked about this. We've talked about their utility around the world for national missions and their possible growth of missions, especially with NORAD and the Space Command mission. Emergency services, on the next slide, significant here, responded to over 50 events in 1998. The question isn't whether we're going to have a disaster in Alaska. The question is, when are we going to have that disaster in Alaska? And the preparation to respond to it, but equally important is the preparation to go to the federal pots of money and get the appropriate resources to deal with those disasters when they come. Youth Challenge, we're right now at the funding of some 60% for state funding and 40% for federal funding. It's a great program. It's investing monies and youth that are at risk to keep them from becoming adults at risk. And if you look at the success rate, 80% received their GED, 55% are employed, 30% for their academic or vocational goals, and over 550 graduates since 1993. And this is just taking the military model and implementing it with youths that are at risk, and we all understand the benefits that youth can have when they go through this military model. Counter drug, you can see over 83 million in drug seizures. This gives us good training. It brings new technologies to us, new equipment. It's cooperation with the state police and the FBI. And then finally, our militia and state defense force. For just a few dollars, we had that force available to respond to natural disasters. Office of Veterans Affairs. If you look at all the people in the state of Alaska that are connected with the military, either active duty, guard, dependents of, formerly served with, civilian employees, and our veterans, that's one in every five Alaskans. This is a vital department at a very low level of manning and funding. My next slide, slide 13, shows military construction projects that we are going after and trying to get for Alaska. And you can just scan the amounts there and see the amount of dollars this will bring to Alaska and the amount of jobs this will bring to Alaska. And then finally, the last chart shows you a breakdown of our budget in more specific detail. Mr. Chairman, this completes my presentation. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Colonel, for your overview. Representative Foster?
Yeah, I wanted to welcome you on board, Colonel.
Yes, sir.
You know, I've never had the chance to thank my good friend from Sitka here. When he was a speaker back in January 1991, he created the Standing Committee for the Military. And prior to that time, we had never had a committee for the military here. And as a matter of fact, the Senate still does not have a military committee, but it's certainly a forum for your organization. One thing here this doesn't say is that Alaska actually has more veterans than any other state. Per capita.
Well, in fact, we need to add that.
A tremendous emphasis on your department, Veterans Affairs, for the veterans. I was wondering, on Ken Taylor now, when he retired, on page 7, you've got the, on your chain of command, you've got the four top ones there. I wonder if you can just put names in there just for the benefit of the committee. I'm not even sure who's doing anymore myself.
The acting commander of the Air National Guard is Colonel Van Williams.
Van Williams, okay.
And we'll be looking very shortly to recommend to the governor who the next commander of the Air Guard should be. The commander of the Army National Guard is Brigadier General Steve Korenik.
Okay.
The Division of Emergency Services, I just made a recommendation late last week to the governor that Dave Liebersbach be appointed in that position. And I'm going to need some help here on the rest of them, either George or
well,
Carol.
Just the top facilities management. The
facilities management is...
Ron Pitts is the deputy director.
Okay, Pitts. So.
Ron Pitts, and then when that slides over to, into the Army Guard, General Krennic will actually be head of that organization as part of all of his responsibilities.
Now, you mentioned the disaster services. I just wanted to add, I remember back in 92, we had a big storm in Nome. That caused $8 million worth of improvements, so I wanted to thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions? Yes, Representative Davies.
Just following on that last comment, when I was the state seismologist, we thought about having a big statewide seminar one time called The Benefits of Disaster. But actually, I did have a specific question. On your slide 6, Air National Guard, you talked about the new positions. Are those, would those be net positions to Alaska, or would there be some of those shifting from the Air Force?
Well, right now they would be net positions. And the when you look at assuming of the NORAD mission, for example, the intention is to migrate into that responsibility over time, but to always keep it at least some active participation in that. It's a predominantly a NORAD mission. What this will do, and the final answer to your question is not determined at this time, we don't see a downsizing of the active duty Air Force connected with this. What we do is we freeing that numbered Air Force up to be more of an expeditionary Air Force, like doctrinally the Air Force said a numbered Air Force should operate. So this is good news for it. And it follows the model that we see in the lower 48. The National Guard in the lower 48 assumes the air sovereignty, air defense mission. And in addition to doing the command post or the RAOC piece of that, hopefully this will migrate ultimately to the National Guard having its own fighter aircraft up here to fly the air defense and air sovereignty mission, and maybe even a migration out to assume greater responsibility or even control of the radar stations. This is very, very significant action on both the active side, the Guard side, and the Alaska side.
That's good. Thanks.
Sir?
Yeah. One of the key differences, if we assume...
If you could identify here. Yourself strictly for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sir. That's fine. You're fine. We just have, because it's being recorded, and they don't recognize your voice as much as your name.
Colonel George Canellis.
Thank you, Colonel.
One of the key differences, sir, if we assume the mission to clear, is that instead of remote, single Air Force members, there'll be families there. So probably up to 100 families, which means residences and dollars flowing into the Denali Borough.
Thank you very much.
Sure. And one of the big actions there is coming up with a plan on how do we build that family housing. And it's establishing a new model or a new paradigm for how we can do it, both with private finance and possibly Alaska assistance to building the houses, or maybe even individual ownership that then is sold to the other members as they come up. But again, that's a significant activity as well.
Colonel, in relation to the challenge program, you said that we're now at 60% state funding for it. Is that for the FY2000 in the current year, we're at 50-50? Or we're at 60-40?
I believe we're now at that 60-40 model. Carol might be able to tell you what I really meant to say.
It's the other way around. It's 40% state, 60% fed.
Okay, I stand corrected then.
That's what I thought, but the long-term prognosis for federal funding is that, is it going to become 50-50? Carol?
Our understanding is 60-40 is the one that's going to be stabilized.
Okay. I know when I was back there in October, there are a lot of states who are pushing to get into this program, and trying to begin a challenge program, so the senator was very concerned about maintaining what level he could fall to and then maintain. And I thought it was 60-40 or 50-50. I wasn't sure how it fell out. So, also, in relation to the division of the Veterans Affairs, Office of Veterans Affairs, is that actually within Military and Veterans Affairs? I remember back the first couple years I was here, it was deleted from the budget, and then the governor put the office back into the governor's office, and now it's back over here. What exactly is the status of the Office of Veterans Affairs?
According to my understanding, and I'll look for help from my staff, it is one position that's 100% state funded. It's within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and it coordinates our support to our veterans.
I remember at the time that it was deleted, we also bumped up some veteran service organizations as well as some other things that corresponded. And so I was just trying to get a better handle.
Any other questions? Representative Terrio. On the back page, adjustments that you have here shows $9,000 for LEPC grants and also the CERC travel, $4,000. Over the last couple of years, I've been watching them to see whether all the LEPCs have finished their local plans. I'm wondering where we are in that whole process. And the grants here, is that for equipment? What's that for? Because basically I told them until they could finish up their planning, they weren't going to get money to purchase a lot of equipment until we sort of knew where they needed to go. So what's the
Nico,
detail?
Maybe you or Carol could help me with that.
The $9,000 is really from last year. We had a difference from DEC's budget to DMVA's budget, and the difference was $9,000. So the DEC budget was $9,000 higher. That amount of money now has been put in the DMVA budget to make them comparable. We are going through the planning. There are a lot of people that have their plans finished and in the testing phase. We plan on having that kind of information to you so you will know who is at what stage. We do have it in a detailed form. The $4,000, last year we didn't put in the budget. The Department of Fish and Games portion that we send to agencies to pay for their travel to attend the CERC meetings, and that $4,000 is what that is. The grants to the LEPCs, the $9,000, they're at maintenance level except for that $9,000.
What was the overall number for the grants last year?
I think it's $543,000 over in the DEC, and we were $534,000 or something like that.
Carol, and one other highlight in the budget. I noticed that your operating budget is down 1.6 and change, but you're transferring 1.5 to the capital budget, so it's more of a fund shift than it is an actual reduction. And is that correct?
Yes, Representative Mulder, that is federal funds. We use it to access, like, Fed Scout Bill monies. We figured it was better in the capital budget. That's exactly right.
Essentially, this is a maintenance budget with no increase for inflation.
Okay. And then I also read you correct that you're basically shifting for the net result is you're showing 12 positions deleted. But you're adding 9 full and 2 part-time, so the net result is 1 position lost?
Actually, we have 1 position gained for the entire department, and that's the Y2K position. But other than that, your statement, I believe, is accurate.
Is that how am I reading it wrong, Carol? Or Nico?
For the record, my name is Nico Busta. The net gain is 1 position, and it is a Y2K position funded out of the governor's office, Y2K funds. We shifted 11 positions in the youth corps from non-perm to full-time right. positions, and then we deleted a position in the commissioner's office. We switched a person from full-time to part-time in the commissioner's office, and we also deleted 1 position in the Army Guard facility maintenance project.
Okay. I was simply basing it upon your permanent full-time, permanent part-time, 9 plus 2. And then on the NP, you had a negative 12.
That's correct.
So that's why I was coming up with the not negative 1, but you're saying it's actually an adding a position.
It's negative 1. Right.
Oh, it is negative 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other, Representative
Terrio? Another question on the Alaska Naval Militia. Is this a group of people, it's my understanding, to respond to the fisheries disaster? There was some confusion on whether militia people would go out, be called up to go out and help respond to that, whether it was going to be state employees. How did that all work out?
I think I can probably answer that based on the situation of any guardsman that is also a state employee, like my position. Anytime you go on a federal mission, you either have to be on leave from your state position. Either on leave that is granted because the state supports guardsmen through personal leave or leave without pay. So ultimately, this situation is exactly the same for all of us.
Any questions for Colonel?
If not, thank you very much, Colonel. You stayed within your half hour.
Mr. Chairman, I saved our $1 million.
You accomplished your first mission.
Thank you. I'd like to thank all the members of the committee for a warm reception. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I did see Commissioner Shively here, if he would like to join us. Welcome, Commissioner, and thank you for making yourself available for today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's always a pleasure. For the record, my name is John Shively. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. You have a little handout, which I'm actually not going to use. But I am going to highlight some of the things that we have been doing and think we will be doing. And it's my understanding you wanted about 10 minutes of that and then some time for questions. As you know, our mission, which we partially negotiated with the legislature last year, is to develop, conserve, and enhance natural resources for present and future Alaskans. For an economy that is based largely on natural resources, we certainly play a major role in that, and the fact that the economy has been doing reasonably well, at least up to now, certainly driven a lot of our workload and a lot of what you're going to hear about. I would like to say, to begin with, that I know there has been a fair amount of discussion about measuring how parts of government do their business. We believe that is appropriate. I'm not going to go over the measures here, but when we get into subcommittee and get down into the various divisions, we will have specific measures for you. I think we have tried over the last several years to provide in general, particularly in our major goals in the executive budget books, goals that are measurable that we can be measured against. Another sort of general issue, Y2K compliance. I think we're one of the departments that's maybe a little better off than some of the others. We started about 6 years ago to address this issue. We're actually in final testing of most of our mission critical systems, I think we feel that we should be in shape and hopes by the end of the year to deal with that difficult issue. As I think you're also aware, most of the Department of Natural Resources staff is actually in Anchorage. This is something that was done long before I became commissioner, and we occupy the biggest part of the space in the Frontier Building. We will be moving to the Bank of America Building, and the move starts next week, and the Division of Oil and Gas will be the first division that moves, and we should be moved right after the first of the year is of 2000. So we'll be moving different divisions throughout this year. I think one of the ways that the department has been able and will be able to keep up with what I hope will be a growing economy is electronic commerce. It took the state a while to get to the point where we would even accept credit cards for anything. I think the Division of Motor Vehicles really led that. That's allowed some of the rest of us to get into that business, and we have right now online availability of our park cabins. We want to get that online for electronic commerce, and then we want to start to get to other parts of our business. Also, the oil and gas royalty, we now are accepting information back and forth electronically from the industry. We are asking for more money this year to get that to a position where we can actually do the bills. It's a very complicated billing system for royalties because of the problem of the fact that we settle differently with each of our major producers, and so each of them has a different kind of bill based on a different formula. We did proceed with the land sale that you funded for us. We sold $1.5 million worth of land and 74 contracts, we'll be working on another land sale in the near future. The recorder's office, which I suspect there may be some discussion of, has been a problem for us. The workload has increased dramatically. If you looked at the number of pages, because the documents actually, it's what we put in by page. It's not just the document. And as things get, as the lawyers make things more complicated for us, the pages increase, and that's increased almost 50% since 1994. 1994, we had about 400,000 pages of documents. We'll now have 600,000 pages of documents. We have started up a system that, our own system, we think it is a better system, both for what can be happen internally and also for our customers, although I know not everybody agrees with that. Oil and gas, we have basically transferred from the old leasing system of trying to figure out, you know, which parcel the industry might want to area-wide leasing. Our first area-wide sale was on the North Slope last year. That netted us $55 million, which is the fourth largest lease sale in the state's history. And as you know, then once we do the area-wide lease sale, we have everything that's not sold is up. We offer each year for 10 years, so the next offer for that will be in February. Then our first Cook Inlet area-wide sale is currently scheduled for April. May not be quite so fortunate in the amount of money, but I think the system, both in terms of internal workload and how people view us, the industry certainly likes it a lot, and I think even for those people that are concerned about lease sales, it's a better way to go. Timber, we've had in the last couple of years about 100 timber sales. They're mostly pretty small, but we've tried to concentrate on getting timber to people that add value. And particularly in Southeast, and we do, I think as the governor mentioned in the State of the State, we finally are producing railroad ties in the state, and we hope to fill at least a niche in the timber market, but, I mean, to be perfectly frank, we cannot compete with the kind of supply that the federal government could provide if they chose to provide, which they're not choosing to provide. Mining has been, I think, a real bright spot on the horizon, and we think it can continue to expand. The gold price isn't great right now. We would expect that the next mine to go into production would be Pogo near Delta, but Donlin Creek on the Kuskokwim, there's certainly active exploration there. True North near Fairbanks is another one, and Kensington down here. So, the activity level for claims is basically the historic level for new claims has been about 2,000 to 3,000 a year, and we've been averaging over 10,000 a year. Part of that is due to the aeromagnetic work that you have funded and that we have done through Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, and we expect we have more money in the budget to do that this year, and that I think will continue. In fact, that program is now so good that people start staking areas before we do the aeromagnetic surveys because they assume that there must be something good there, or we wouldn't be looking. The pipeline office, we did last in December sign the right-of-way for the Alpine lease. Pipeline office, of course, originally was for the Trans-Alaska pipeline, but we also do the right-of-way for the new pipelines and oversee that. So we did, of course, Badami a little over a year ago. The next right-of-way that we'll sign is for the Nuiqsut gas line. And North Star will be later this year. Also, the state will be involved over the next several years with the TAPS right-of-way renegotiation, since I think that right-of-way has to be renewed around 2002 or 2003. We had 3.5 million recreational visits to our parks last year. Our park fees increased user fees by about 5%, including charging people in Anchorage, which made a difference. We are looking at... I think our biggest problem in parks is deferred maintenance. It's been a problem for some time. We're lucky that through the Department of Transportation, we've been able to build a number of new things, and also partially from Fish and Game, but we have a lot of trouble maintaining the old things. You'll see before you this year, I think, some legislation relating to boating safety that will allow us to get some federal funding and some funding for the snow machine point of sale registration, which I think the snow machine community is very interested in. Agriculture, we sold our first three parcels in the Mat Valley in some time last year, netted us almost $750,000. We've had other sales up around Delta, and we expect to have another sale next spring. I think the big issue overall in agriculture is the fact that the state still owns two of the key pieces of industry, or of the industry, the mat-made creamery in Anchorage, and the slaughterhouse in Palmer, how long we should own those and what should happen to them, I think are important right now. I think given the fact that basically land and growth in the industry was held up while we solved the mental health trust issue means that we should not make any quick decisions, but certainly over time it's something that we really need to look at. We are asking, I think, for four major increments. We're asking for oil and gas. We have, at least so far, experienced increased activity in a couple areas. We're starting to get exploration licensing proposals, and until we finish all the best interest findings for area-wide, that's just extra work, because in order to do an exploration license, we have to do a best interest finding, so we ask for that. And staff, just to keep up with the fact that the industry now, because we're dealing with smaller fields, we have a lot more activity. It's actually just as much work to do a small alpine or tarn or something like that, or maybe not just as much, but close to as much work as doing a Prudhoe Bay. Prudhoe Bay, you know, produces millions or hundreds of thousands of barrels a day, and the other fields produce tens of thousands. So there's been a lot more activity there, and it certainly is an important part of our economy. In addition, we've asked for money to staff for the electronic interface with the industry. I touched on that briefly. As I said, our mining claims have increased tremendously in the last several years, and in order to keep the processing time to something reasonable, we've asked for a position there. And the recorder's office, we've asked for, I think, seven positions, but those basically are funded out of user fees. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Gleaning from your comments, Commissioner, in relation to the creamery, I obviously read the LB&A report, which was rather skeptical of the creamery's operation, and made some pretty direct statements about questioning the state's involvement or long-term involvement within the creamery. Are there any general funds that go into the creamery's operation right now?
There haven't been in the past several years.
And I think that was an important point that people didn't understand if they read that necessarily. What is your long-term prognosis? If you could look at the crystal ball and make a determination, Commissioner, are you going to make a recommendation at all?
We're not going to make a recommendation this year. I would like to have at least 2 to 3 more years of land sales in the Mat Valley to see if there's a dairy industry that develops. I mean, you've got to have the land available for the industry to develop. I ultimately, and this is going to get me a little bit of trouble with my agricultural friends, but I ultimately do not think that facility in Anchorage is the appropriate place for the facility. It's right now zoned so that you cannot upgrade it in a major way. It's right in the middle of it sits next to a McDonald's and across from a jazz bar, and it's really not an industrial area. I really think that what you will see, if there is a decent dairy industry develop in the valley, that somebody will have a smaller and more efficient and more up-to-date operation that will be built out there somewhere. That's just a guess. And that then the Ag Revolving Loan Fund would sell the property in Anchorage for, you know, basically real estate. I mean, you'd probably tear that building down and put something else there.
Representative Bundy.
Mr. Commissioner, compliment you on being a master of an understatement when you discuss the recorder's office and possibility of differences of opinions. This wonderful new system, the last I heard was about a month behind. It ran for at least 2 hours to try to catch up, and the files are laying on a table somewhere, allowing people who need to use the recorder's office to come and pour through them. Has anything changed significantly?
Well, the system has been behind for some time, and I think there's a two parts of the system, and I think that's one of the things that's misunderstood. There's the initial document input, and this has been true whether Mr. Motznik has run the system or whether we're running it. That we try to do, and I think we're required by law to do in the first day. Because it's done quickly, it doesn't always get done right, and therefore we verify everything. So there's a double check on everything. The verification has been from anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 or 7 weeks behind. We believe under the new system, and that's been true at least, I think, for the last year, if not the last 2 years. Under the new system, we believe every recorder's office in the state will have verification done within a day or two by February 1st, somewhere between February 1st and February 5th. There are a whole variety of efficiencies in the new system, and I'll only give you one of them. Well, the first is the new system is Y2K compliant, which we felt was important. But an example of the kind of efficiency, particularly as the documents have gotten more complicated, under the Motsnik system, if you had a complicated document and you were about halfway through it and you had to be pulled off to do something else, and you pulled that document down, you lost everything that you had input and you had to start all over again. But in the new system, if you need the break and do something, you set the document aside, which is not difficult to do in the kind of technology that's available today but was not available in the old system. Do your whatever you have to do and then go back to it. And I know that Mr. Motsnik does not agree with a lot of what we're doing. We believe that it is a better system internally. It will allow us to do things that we could not do under the old system. We thought long and hard about doing this. I will tell you that. I met with Bob and we chatted about it. He did provide the state free service for a number of years, and we appreciate that. We've compensated him somewhat by giving him availability of our data for, it's 6 years. I'm not sure what we went up for 12 years in the future, which other people would have to pay for. So we held off implementing it for a couple months in order to accommodate him, and we've tried to work with what he needs. But and I don't know whether... I don't think Bob's ever going to be convinced we did the right thing, and some of you may not either, but we tried to look at what his concerns were and address them.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess the key point is not whether Mr. Motsnik is convinced, it's whether the legislature is convinced. I would thank you for sharing this information with me. I would point out that... just a final statement here that's, I'm not sure it's a system problem as much as a management problem. And the final sentence is, we're experiencing a high level of public complaints, the staff turnover with no relief in sight. There's currently no light at the end of the end of the tunnel. It might be time to turn out the light and just privatize it.
But I'm having strong feelings about it.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, we just read in the paper where a lot of the new parks that have been under construction for the last 3 or 4 years are complete, but of course there's no personnel to man them, so they probably won't be opened. I'm wondering, or at least the insinuation is, that they may not be opened, and I think that there was some discussion on problems finding concessionaires to handle those. What's been going on and what might be the prognosis for those new parks? And also, is there any capital projects to build any more new parks that may not be manned?
Well, first of all, I believe we're going to open them. The problem is we can't manage them well, and that means that we get bigger maintenance problems because we don't have people around. So we're not, at this point, intending to close any. We've had a hard time finding concessionaires when we've bid them out, and we've had a number turned back, particularly up in the interior. I don't know why. It hasn't worked. It's worked in some areas and not worked in others. We have one contractor up on near Montana Creek who's had the thing since the beginning. He's done very well with it, he and his wife, but they had their own operation right across the street, and they complement each other. We did several, I think, up around Toke, and we got them back. We tried to do Anchor Point, as you may recall, and the Chamber of Commerce told us they didn't want Anchor Point done because we provide a little bit of police protection that they don't feel like paying for themselves. So, I mean, I'm still going to look at whether or not we can find concessionaires. That's an option. The answer to your last question is I believe we are still designing some, but we're really going to, before we start building any new big ones that are going to come on, I'm going to start looking very closely at whether we should do that. I mean, if we don't think we can staff it, then it doesn't make any sense. Or whether we just trade new facilities for old ones, which is another way of doing it, is to just say, okay, we'll bring these new things on, but the following old ones will be closed. And I think we're at a point where we have to make that kind of decision.
Commissioners, I read that same article. What I gleaned from it was the director of parks saying that they were not going to necessarily staff or adequately staff to protect the more remote sites, but those that had the higher volume certainly would be getting attention. Is that a more? Is
yeah,
that
we'll. Right? I mean, we're obviously, you know, we have to set priorities, and we'll look at the ones where there's the most use. But that doesn't always mean that's where there's the most. Able to provide you with some things. I think at this point, to be frank, there are two things that I think the legislature should keep in mind in terms of reducing budgets, given the fact that there have been budget reductions over the years, and I think DNR has done its share, particularly given the fact that a lot of what we do, the business has increased. The first thing I think the legislature should look at is repealing laws. I mean, you can't talk about the budget. You know, where every year the legislature gives the state government 100 new responsibilities to do, which is about the number of laws that gets passed every year. We really need to think about repealing things. And I think if you're going to reduce the budget, and if that's the goal, and I understand why it needs to be something that's considered, which the governor has said himself, then we nearly need to think in big chunks. And we will be providing you a list of relatively large chunks of DNR that you could do away with. We will also tell you what we think the impact of that will be. So, yes, we are working on that.
Okay.
When will we get that list?
Representative Terrio?
Commissioner, when do you think you might have a list together?
Probably the week after next, or at least I'm going to be out of state next week and I want to look at it. We did one pass through and I didn't think it was aggressive enough.
And is it your assumption or conclusion, Commissioner, that you weren't the only commissioner that was asked to do this?
All I know is we've discussed. We haven't had specific direction on what we should look at in terms of cuts, but we've certainly discussed at the cabinet meeting that we're going to need to do that, and it's going to need to be part of it. How each commissioner is interpreting what we've talked about, I can only chat about myself.
I mean, there is a certain amount of emotional appeal to repealing laws. And that's why I'm curious if that was kind of the directive to look at what can be repealed.
Well, I'm probably a little out in front of my boss on that issue. Which may be one of my last political statements.
I don't know. It seems like good music here, though, Commissioner. Yes, Representative Terrio.
And for the committee members here, might not remember back to House Bill 109, but this department in particular, has always been willing to suggest things. And then it's our policy call of whether to cut back on things, but they've been very good to work with. I've worked with them quite a bit over the years to streamline things. And that last package, I think, this is sections of statutes, so I'm not sure about entire programs, but we deleted 15 or 16 sections of statutes. And we may have to, I applaud you to take an aggressive look, and then it's our policy call whether to back off on that, but at least you've made the suggestions.
Representative Williams.
Yeah, along those same lines of restructuring, would you look at other areas, other agencies that may be able to take that is probably similar to what you're doing and would be able to do some of the work and vice versa?
The governor has talked about that kind of thing. We basically do management issues. Other agencies do more permitting, and so there is a difference. Whether or not you can combine those things, I don't know. I mean, I think, for instance, we've looked at the issue of water management. We deal with the quantity of water. DEC deals with the quality. you know, should that those issues be done in two separate agencies? Maybe not. And so Michelle and I have talked about that. And to be perfectly frank, water quality for this state is probably right now in most places a bigger issue than the quantity. And it's basically the quantity issue is a, you know, first in time, first in line. So it's not a lot of, so I mean, there are things like that. But I, and we've tried to combine efforts in the field sometimes when we're out there looking at things that we think might affect other agencies on forest practices or oil, but we haven't actually combined the responsibilities.
How about with the private landowners also? You work in that sense?
Well, it's difficult for the government to give its responsibilities to private landowners whom we're supposed to oversee.
Say that again.
I think it's difficult for us. If we have a responsibility, say under the Forest Practices Act, to delegate that responsibility to the people that we're supposed to look at. Now, sometimes we do allow them to provide by contractors. Government has done that. But we still have to retain the right to make the decision of whether they're meeting the public policy set by the legislature. Now, on the other hand, the particularly in the forest industry, the private sector has been very helpful in funding studies that have shown whether or not our forest practices work is actually beneficial, and so we have used it in that way. But we haven't really delegated much to private landowners.
I've been talking with some private landowners, and they say that they have been, you know, there's some I know that are very experienced in this, in the area. They do have the foresters, Fish and Game, Sea Alaska, for instance, and you, the State Department, the state DNR would certainly find out whether or not they were pushing the envelope one way or the other very quickly. With the decline in revenue, I mean, we have to look at things a little differently. I hope you'd look at that. One other area in the parks, my favorite area, Nico likes this one. What are you going to do with the Ketchikan Park and Mud Bite? How much money are you putting into that area again?
I don't know the answer to that. Is that the one at the end of the road?
Well, no, that's close. Mud Bite is, it has a totem park.
Oh, it's a...
And it's a tourist attraction.
Right. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the parks that makes the most...
Direct competition with the private sector that's in that area.
So you think we should do what?
I'd like to know what you think. I've been saying that the state, we as a government, should not be in competition with any private sector enterprise.
So you would suggest we close the totem park? Is that what you're suggesting?
You know, if I was sitting in your seat, I would certainly find out how we are competing with these the private sector.
Well,
and if we're not, I'd like to know.
All of our parks compete with the private sector. I don't think there's a single... Anytime we provide a free parking place, access to water, whether it's on the Kenai River or... we compete with the private sector. The private sector probably, in a number of cases, provides amenities that we don't provide. And in terms of a totem park, which was established, I'm not sure how long ago, a fair time ago, though, which I think it's one of our older parks, you know, to say because there's now private competition, we should, I mean, are you suggesting we sell it?
You know, there was talk several years ago about turning that piece of property over to someone to manage it in the private sector.
If it didn't get off
the first base. I agree with you that we do compete in some areas. This is a direct competition when you have both entities in that area, the state and the private sector, both doing the same thing.
Wow.
And that's my district, and the other is in my community. So I think I know a little bit about it. I know how much money the state has put into it, and I know how much money, and I know when it was started. I'd like to know what the state is, plans are with that.
It's a high...
Commissioner, if I might, sounds like a great opportunity to schedule an appointment with Representative Williams.
Okay, fine.
Yes, Representative Corey.
Hello, John. As you know, I have the DNR budget subcommittee. I'm looking forward to working with you and your staff. I just want to make a kind of a generic observation because I don't have a lot of information on the issue of land disposal potentials and how much land, say, that the state could potentially administer to the private sector. But I think perhaps that could be our ace in the hole as far as generating some income that the state could realize, where it could serve a twofold purpose. We could generate substantial dollars, you know, to deal with the budget situation, but it can also put lands in the private sector that a lot of us have been advocating for that could help in turn over time stimulate the economy, generate a good strong private sector. And the Mat-Su, if my numbers are right, has something like 2% of its land in the private sector. Now, of course, there's a lot of federal land out there as well, but also a lot of state land. So what I'd like to do, and you don't necessarily have to answer this unless you want, but to work with you over the next course of the several months of the session here to identify what lands potentially could be offered through land sales where we could generate some additional dollars. I know you folks are working real hard to try to accomplish this goal in part anyway, but I just wonder if there's some way we can accelerate that effort. First of all, inventorying exactly what we have that is outside the scope of, say, trails and recreation areas, game refuges, habitat areas, and so forth, and zeroing on what we could potentially sell to the public or even just give away through a homestead program, for example. That could accomplish these goals that I just articulated, the generating monies for the state and also helping with building our economy.
Well, we have a list of what's available, and some of that's surveyed, and if it's surveyed, then that's solved. It all has to be appraised because by law we have to get fair market value. The giveaway programs, I think, are sort of over, although if the legislature wants to set policy to give land away, that's another thing. I will tell you, in terms of costs of government, disposing of land in small chunks to private people is probably one of the most expensive things you can do, because then the next thing that people want are roads, electricity, telephones, and in the 80s we had the money to do all that. We don't have the money to do it now.
Thank you. Representative Bundy for a quick question, and then Representative Terrio.
I did want to, as long as we're on parks, compliment you on what's happening in Chugach State Park and the access and charging access fees there. I think that's working very well, and certainly a step to, I think, consider in other areas. You said something a little earlier that was an interesting and refreshing comment, maybe put you out on the lightning rod tip a little bit, and that is what we could do without, and I assume also then the consequences of what happens we do without. And that's a little more long term. We're facing also, I guess the state could run out of money next month if we don't do a supplemental here pretty quick, and you know, there's been some dialogue between the legislature and the governor. not a high level agreement at this point. And I would ask you if you've also considered what we can do to try to meet the immediate shortfall, and at what level we could reduce the supplemental, and of course what the consequences would be, and add that to your long-range planning if you haven't already.
I mean, we can look at the two together. I mean, we're largely driven by personnel costs. So, you know, for instance, let's take the Division of Oil and Gas. It's 80% or more, I think actually more than that, personnel. So, I mean, we can lay off personnel. That means one of two things happen. Either we stop doing something or cycle times for something increase, assuming we can't find ways to be more efficient, which we continue to look for. To be frank, I think it would be hard to have a major reduction in DNR that didn't involve laying off a bunch of people between now and June 30th, and if that's what we're going to need to do, obviously we need to do that relatively soon to have any impact at all, because we're over halfway through the budget year now.
Thank you.
Representative Terry.
On your budget summary sheet here, Division of Agriculture goes up by about $400,000. What are those increased funds steered to do, and what's the source of the funds?
Is that the Lancet?
For the record, my name is Nico Bus. The increase in the Division of Agriculture is mostly in the Plant Material Center. They have some new federal funding for I forget the right name.
Germplasm.
Germplasm, so. Yeah.
Thank you. 350. Okay. Representative Foster.
Yeah, real briefly, I appreciate the commissioner being here today. On the bottom of page 36, on the bottom left, one of the things the department is doing is trying to maintain the value of the Alaskan mineral industry at more than $1 billion despite falling commodity prices. I know the world prices, like on zinc and gold and silver, have just been terrible the last couple of years, and I was wondering, and I appreciate your help on trying to maintain that, but I was wondering what that was that you were doing.
Well, I think several things. I mean, the whole idea of telling the mining industry we're interested and we've done this a lot of it in cooperation with the legislature, the large mine permitting program, the exploration credit program, all I think have sent a signal. And, you know, the governor going to the Northwest Mining Conference in Spokane and telling people, I mean, he was the only governor that went there. He was very well received. So, I mean, it's really telling people, even though we recognize their short-term problems, that we have long-term resources. And then just trying to assist people. I mean, Pogo had a major permitting problem because to do some exploration, which I believe we've now worked through, but it was a problem that none of us anticipated, which generally happens only when you develop a mine, but because they were going underground early, it happened earlier.
You know, when he first came before us, 5 Januarys ago it's been now, I remember you said that Alaska was composed of 3 parts, igneous, metamorphic, and sedimentary. I was wondering if there's been any changes.
Well, you're actually, Representative Foster, confusing me with a commissioner that knew something. Oh. So I think it was someone else.
And which one of those is the rock and which one is the hard place?
Yeah. Representative Williams, your recommendations from the Spruce Bark Beetle task force with other landowners. How long are you in that and what are you doing?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
The Spruce Bark Beetle task force recommendation, how far are you along with that?
Well, it's basically a cooperative effort between the borough and us and the Forest Service. I think the main initial thing was to try to look at areas that needed to be cleared because of their danger for fire near habitated areas, and so we've tried to concentrate on that. The market on the peninsula for that wood is sort of disappeared.
Is there any help with the federal government? And they're having the same problem there.
The federal government, as far as I can tell, isn't inclined to harvest trees.
I know.
And I don't know how to help them.
Are you talking to your boss? See if you could do something in that area.
I think we could discuss that all.
Representative Osterman.
Off the budget in a second, but the 475 bundles of
trees that floated on shore in Kodiak?
Half of them are floating on shore in Kodiak. Is there any thing being done as far as the concern of Kodiak with the spread of the
$1 million? I believe we have some entomologists looking at that. And other than that, I don't know the answer. I really don't. I don't know. I mean, we have no program to go pick those logs up and get them out of there, which I think would be the only way to handle them if there indeed was a problem. I don't know how well spruce bark beetles survive saltwater. It's just, I don't know. And I can certainly try to find that out.
Obviously, the potential of spreading it.
I understand.
I don't know whether the insurance company in that instance needs to be brought to pressure needs brought there by the state to
pick that up. I don't know the answer.
If there are no further questions for the commissioner, we greatly appreciate you coming forward today, Commissioner. Look forward to working with you this session. Appreciate your candor. Commissioner Condon, thank you for joining us today. You're welcome to have anybody join you at the table that you would like, if you'd like, or you can.
Well, I'll try flying solo and see what happens here.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Condon, for joining us, and the mic is yours.
For the record, I'm Wilson Condon, Commissioner of Revenue. If I understand the instructions properly, you don't want me to say very much.
Brevity is value.
Before I open up for questions, but I did want to make a couple of introductory points. First of all, almost everything that we do in the portion of the Department of Revenue that's a normal executive branch department is related to our name, revenue, and our responsibility for raising revenue, protecting financial assets of the state, and hopefully making money revenue off the financial assets of the state. The only part of our executive operations that doesn't raise more money than it spends is our permanent fund dividend division, which obviously has the responsibility of distributing permanent fund dividends. With respect to the operations that we're responsible for, from my perspective, there are two critical issues in our budget. One of them relates to our Child Support Enforcement Division. And for the Child Support Enforcement Division, we need to modify the funding source for the state match for the Child Support Enforcement Program, because welfare reform has reduced the availability of something called federal incentive payments. And I'll explain that in a little bit of detail in a minute. The second critical item that relates to our budget is that we need to correct the oversight that occurred right at the end of the last legislative session that left the Treasury Division short-funded by $500,000 for this fiscal year. Obviously, we need to deal with that for this fiscal year, and we need to reflect fixing that in the FY 2000 budget. When you look at the overall budget submission that is available, I don't know whether any of you have actually taken out this book. I'd be surprised if you had.
We haven't yet received it.
Okay. But it details $145.3 million worth of spending. And of that, just about $80 million reflects the budgets of independent corporations that are incorporated for administrative purposes in the Department of Revenue, and that includes the Permanent Fund Corporation, the Housing Finance Corporation, the Bond Bank Authority, Mental Health Trust Authority, and another entity, but we really included as part of our executive operations, is the State Pension Investment Board. As all of you know, the Treasury Division provides the staff for investing state pension fund monies. Of the $66 million that relates pretty directly to executive branch Department of Revenue operations, $12.5 million of that is what we are requesting from the general fund for this year. So you can take the $145 million and distill it down to the $12.5 million, and that $12.5 million pays for all of the operations of our two tax divisions, pays for the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, pays for 30% of our Treasury Division, just about. The other 70% is paid for by the pension funds. The general fund pays about 25% of the Commissioner's Office and our Administrative Services Division. And they make up about, general fund monies make up about 60% of the matching money requested for the Child Support Enforcement Division. With respect to the Child Support Enforcement Program, let me just give you a little background on it to refresh your recollection. It is a program which is matched by the state, and two-thirds of the money in the program are the federal share, and one-third is the state share. With respect to the state share, there are several options that states have for funding the one-third state share. Some states fund it with general fund money, and we do so partially. Most states use something called incentive payments, and that is federal money that's paid to states based on the performance of their programs. And most states get an incentive payment equal to 12.9% of the total amount of welfare payments that are collected from non-custodial parents. And the third option that's available to states for funding their state share is to use the state portion of the welfare money that's collected back from non-custodial parents. As you know, one of the conditions that is imposed upon people who receive public assistance is that they assign their rights to and assist the state in collecting those public assistance back from the non-custodial parent. And that's one of the major elements of our program, and we collect just a little over $20 million a year back from non-custodial parents in connection with our child support program. Half of that money that we collect is federal money, and half of it is state money, and many states use the one-half state share that they're collecting back to provide the match to run the program. The choice that the state of Alaska made several years ago in funding its child support program was to use the incentive money and combine it with general fund money to provide the one-third state match. And it decided to use the recaptured welfare money elsewhere. Part of it is used in the public assistance program in the Department of Health and Social Services, and part of that money is simply returned to the general fund. What has happened, and it happened about 13 or 14 months ago, is that the welfare reform program adopted by you, the legislature, began to show substantial success in terms of the amount of money and being paid out in public assistance payments, as well as the number of people who required public assistance. That immediately showed up in, or not immediately, but after some months, those successes showed up in the amount of welfare money that we were able to recapture through our child support enforcement program. As a consequence of that, there has been a substantial reduction in the incentive payment that we're receiving in conjunction with this program. Now, the question I would expect you to ask is, well, how about the overall workload? Has it dropped? And it is not. The total number of cases that we have has continued to increase modestly. The amounts of money that we are collecting continues to increase modestly, but the proportion of money that we are collecting is moving away from recaptured welfare payments. And so the cocktail, if you will, non-welfare and welfare, has changed, but the total amount of collections and the total number of cases have not. So what we are proposing, and we're proposing it both in a supplemental for this year, which we need, and for funding next year, is a shift of away from the incentive payments for the state match, and using instead what's left over in the recaptured welfare payments that we are collecting. There's a portion of that money being used to fund the public assistance program in the Department of Health and Social Services, but there is some remainder, and that remainder is sufficiently large to substitute for the incentive money that we thought we were going to receive, but which we are not going to receive. The Treasury issue, which I mentioned, I'll just spend a very brief amount of time on. The Treasury budget for this fiscal year was to be funded $500,000 from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, and at the very end of the last legislative session, that little piece of the appropriation did not make it through. Immediately after the legislature adjourned, there was an exchange of letters between our department and the chairs of the finance committees, and an acknowledgement that that slip-up had occurred and needed to be corrected. Need remains the same, and obviously it not only affects this year's budget, but reflects, at least in terms of the way the computer spits out the number, an increase in the general fund budget for the department for this year. And I think the last thing I need, in terms of detailing changes away from business as we've been doing it, there's one other element in the child support program, and that is to comply with federal law, we were required to install and convert to a new computer system. Most of you, in one way or another, through your staffs, have had to deal with your constituents' problems as we've made that conversion. As we look at the cost of running the new system, it is running the old system for a year cost us a little over $1 million a year, and the new system is going to cost us about $1.8 million a year, and the state share of that, as we requested as an increment in our budget, is a little over $200,000. So I think that probably is enough to open things up for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Commissioner, with the Treasury, $500,000 shortfall, if we did not fund it, what would be the net result?
The net result would be that we would have to shut the Treasury down pretty much in late March. We will have spent the 70% of the money that the retirement systems contributed to run the Treasury division, and that we simply won't have enough money to do anything substantial for the balance of the fiscal year.
One other point with CSED, you were speaking about the fact that, well, if I heard you right, you were saying the savings that we captured from welfare, you want to take the savings we captured from welfare reform and put them into CSED?
No. What I want to do is to use some of the money that we have collected back from non-custodial parents. When a custodial parent receives public assistance, they assign to the state the right to child support payments from the non-custodial parent, and the state goes out and enforces that right and collects child support from the non-custodial parent and keeps that money. And that amounts to about $20 million a year. 10 of it belongs to the federal government. 10 of it belongs to the state. That money is available legally for use for matching. What this state has done is been to send that money to Health and Social Services and use part of it for the public assistance program, and part of it is whatever is left over that's not budgeted for the public assistance program is returned to the general fund. So it's recaptured welfare payments that we're talking about.
Right. You also mentioned at the beginning of the discussion, however, aren't there several formulas that are possible in terms of determining this process? And one potential alternative solution would be to change the formula?
Well, we can't change the matching requirement.
But I mean, you can change the way we do.
We could fully fund the matching requirement with general funds if we wished. We could fund as much of it as we have money for out of incentive money and make up the difference with either general fund or recaptured welfare benefits. Or we could fully fund it out of recaptured welfare benefits. Those are some combination of those three sources of money are legally available to states, and among the 50 states in the District of Columbia, they've done it in every combination of those three things that you could imagine.
Representative Bundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I will have the opportunity to chair the Subcommittee on Revenue, let me tell you how disappointed I am that you and I won't get to work together for very much longer, and it's not because I'm leaving. So you'll be missed. A couple of questions, if I might. Just a little for my clarification on this $500 million on the Treasury. I believe it was passed in the House, was it not?
Yes, it was.
And the wheels came off then where?
And it's 500,000, not
500,000. Thank you.
I wish it were 500 million, but it was 500,000, and it did not pass the Senate.
I think it probably didn't get a 3/4 vote. Maybe it was
the Senate
minority was at fault there. Maybe, but I'm just speculating. In the area of CSED, I know some states they view that as a service to the public, and there are fees involved for the
yes.
people who receive the service. Has Alaska considered that attaching a fee to that service?
We have looked at it, and we are looking at it. There were not very many states who charge a fee, but I believe there are about five. Mm-hmm. And we are looking at that as a possibility.
Okay, and one other thing. You have a number of different corporations, basically, in your department. And the legislature just did a study on compensation for state employees. Have you tracked between the various departments compensation for employees with basically the same kinds of positions? In other words, if you work for one of the corporations that are under your division, are you likely to be more well compensated than if you work for the other?
There is some difference in compensation, certainly at some position levels, among the respective corporations, and that is something we are aware of.
Thank you.
Representative Davies.
One of my questions was essentially answered, but just make sure that let me repeat it to make sure it makes no difference to you in terms of the federal funding on the CSED match, where it comes from. Is there a policy preference for the recovery of those welfare payments, or does it, if it were 100% general fund, would that be perfectly the same?
It would not make any difference to us as long as there was sufficient funds available to run the program.
To make the match.
That's right.
I that was the main question I had. I guess I'd just make an observation, too. If my memory serves me right, it seems to me that there were 15 members in the majority in the Senate last year. they could have made the vote right there.
They could have, could they? And how many? Well, never mind.
No, we don't want to talk about that. Representative Osterman.
Yeah, Commissioner. The $20 million that you're collecting, I'm assuming that's not the full amount that you're paying out, though, in benefits.
No, it's not.
What is the difference?
The amount that's paid out for benefits is something, I believe, between about $70 and $80 million. And so we're collecting back about a quarter.
In general funds.
Pardon?
In general funds, what would it be?
Well, what we collect back is both the general fund and the federal portion of the temporary public assistance grant. And we are in terms of, and well, it's a little bit more complicated than simply saying we're getting back one quarter, because we do look at the ability of the non-custodial parent to pay. And we have a lot of situations where we pay out several $100 a month in a public assistance grant, but the non-custodial parent has income that's well below the poverty line, in which case we make the judgment required under the court rule that governs, which is Civil Rule 90.3, what their child support payment would be, applying that formula. And if it's somebody who's below the poverty level, their payment's going to be $50 a month. So I don't know what the numbers are, but the right statistic to look at is what percentage of people that are the non-custodial parent are we actually getting collections from rather than the dollars.
Representative Bundy?
Mr. Chairman, as has been said before, the rumors of my death were greatly exaggerated. For some reason, I thought that you were going on to other endeavors. And I didn't want you to think I knew something you didn't know. Well,
I guarantee you I did.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Under the realm of good news and good news, I have no knowledge of your imminent demise, either physically or with the legislature.
I'm looking forward to working with you,
sir. Any confusion I may have caused, and the good news is I'm looking forward to working with you for an extended period of time.
Thank you.
Representative Terrio.
Could we bring him back at a lower salary?
Representative,
I listened to Representative Bunny's comments, and I wondered what he was talking about, and I thought, you know, he prefaced the remarks by saying he was chairing the ribbon. I thought this first thing was going to be cut the commissioner out.
All the commissioners that still have a job, please stand up. Sit down.
Commissioner, I know that you've been very involved with this program, the governor's program, this interactive program. I was just wondering, and I think most all of us have had the opportunity to play with it to one level or another. When do you expect, and the governor did make the commitment that he was going to try and make it available to all the members as a software package sometime in the near future. What's the status of that program?
I believe we'll have it available this week. The reasons for not having it right now are technical.
Understand you're making some adjustments to make it a little more user-friendly.
Yes.
Which is wise. one last quick question. In relation to the obvious budget crunch that we have now, have you been directed or been received any direction to look at budget reduction scenarios?
We have, of course, as Commissioner Shively mentioned, it's been a topic of discussion in the cabinet meeting. And we certainly have tried to be prudent managers each year and each time we've submitted a budget. As I look at our responsibilities, we are, of course, responsible for, in every one of our programs, raising money, as I said, other than the permanent fund dividend program. And in each of our programs, certainly our tax programs and our treasury, the judgment we ought to be making is the person at the margin adding more revenue than it's costing the state or not. And I honestly believe that when you look at our two tax divisions and our treasury and our child support enforcement program, that the judgment with respect to each of those programs is that at the margin, the persons there are bringing in more than we're spending on them, thus making resources available for other things that we believe the government needs to do. So, I mean, we're looking, and we're as we look, that's the lens I think we should be using to look at all of the activities that we're responsible for.
Unless there are further questions, the commissioner, I want to thank you for
thank
coming
you.
Forward today. Tomorrow, we are going to be reviewing commerce and economic development and community regional affairs and Glen Allen's budget. The reason that they've not been specified on your House calendar, committee calendars, is that we've been working with OMB to try and allow them some flexibility as they get budgets completed. And put together with Ledge Finance so we can do it in a more timely fashion to try and assist them. So that's why it's not specified which day which department's going to be heard. So we're trying to allow them some flexibility. With that, I want to thank members for coming today, and especially Representative Bundy for adding some levity. And with that, we're adjourned.